Evolution and Darwinism. Evolution is true. But most people don't understand what that means. So what I've laid out here is the difference between what I call evolution and Darwinism. There's other ways to express that. You can call it microevolution and macroevolution. You can call it evolution in the small, evolution in the large. For the evolution in the small or microevolution, you can also call it environmental adaption, which really is my favorite term, but I don't see many people using them. As I say here, evolution is true. Things do change with time, and that's really what it means. It comes from a Latin word meaning to unfold, or to unroll even. It is a process by which organisms change over time. It's an observable fact. Doesn't take a lot of study to see that. In my opinion, Darwinism, the Darwinian theory of evolution, is accepted by faith. But the truth is, there is no scientific evidence for it, at least nothing but some what might be circumstantial evidence. And even after 150 years of looking, because Darwin wrote his famous book, 1859, that's when it was published. He wrote it, took him several years to write it. So I've got a copy of that if anybody's interested. Let me give an example of what evolution is to me, or microevolution. Bacteria develop a resistance to some antibiotic over time. And we see that all the time. I've got a cousin. He's in the hospital with not MRSA or MSRA, but with VRA, a new kind of resistant bacteria that they can't get rid of. We see the color changes in humans, and we see other environmental adaption events. Now that's evolution. But Darwin's theory of evolution, by definition, requires two things. Number one, random mutations of genes resulting in desirable traits, which are then selected out by natural selection. This leads to the creation of new life forms. It's a gradual change. It takes thousands of these minute changes for that to happen. Now, it's a fact, though, that of all the mutations that take place, only roughly 1 in 100,000 leads to any desirable traits. So there are very few desirable traits that come out of that. Now, we'll point out that Darwin had no concept of mutation of genes. He didn't know genes. He did know we had cells in our bodies. But for him, that cell was a homogeneous glob. So in a sense, what I'm talking about here is not just Darwin theory of evolution, but so-called neo or new theory of evolution, sometimes called the general theory of evolution. Let's take a look at this. Darwin's test for the validity of his theory was that he admitted that his theory might absolutely break down, as he said, but he set as the criteria that if it is demonstrated that any complex organ exists that could not possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications. That's the criteria he set. It's a very easy criteria. It puts you at the disadvantage. And that's not the way the scientific method works. But it turns out that a few years ago, a fellow by the name of Mike Behe wrote a book in which he introduced a new concept called irreducibly complex mechanisms in the body. Example, blood clotting, the flagellum, the eye, the DNA itself, which absolutely show that we have no idea. It's just impossible for these kind of organisms to come about. That's not what the scientific, the naturalist community wanted to hear. So they have attacked him, and I've heard that, oh, well, his ideas have been refuted. The truth is that I don't believe that's true. I've looked at some of those. I heard one of them talked about, and they nowhere near refuted his ideas. Darwin set up this simple test, which in essence means, if I can think of a way that this might have happened, and you can't prove that it didn't happen that way, my theory is okay. That does not follow the scientific method. The other part that we talked about, besides the mutation, is what's called natural selection. It's usually called the survival of the fittest. But when you go to look and see, well, what does that mean? What is the fittest? Well, the fittest are those that survive. So what you've got is a circular argument. So it's called in logic a tautology, which is, by definition, it's true. Now let me give an example of another tautology. That bachelor isn't married. Well, that's kind of obvious. By definition, he's not married because he's a bachelor. And that's a tautology. Well, survival of the fittest is a tautology, which really proves nothing to you. Most of you have heard about one of his proofs in his books were the Galapagos Islands finches, which are little birds. When he was there in 1835, he found that there were 13 species of these finches. He assumed they came from a single species. So now we have different species growing from other species. But the truth is that now after almost, not quite, 200 years, they still have the same 13 species on Galapagos Island that they had when Darwin went there. There's been no change. And even if you get a new species, in my thought, that is still in the realm of what I call microevolution. Pretty obvious that they're the same species. Their beak might be a little bigger and they might be a little fatter or something like this, based upon what the environment has been. But these are just species adopting to their environment, which is what I think God has allowed, so we're not so fragile that when things change, that we die. I think the damning thing about this is that the fossil record, which is really the only thing we've got to look back over the eons of time, just does not support the Darwin theory of evolution. There are many species that have appeared suddenly. They come into the geological record. They change a little bit. They do vary a little bit. Microevolution, environmental adaption, and then they're gone. Some of the time we can figure out. Most of the time we can't figure out why they went. But there is no solid evidence, no undisputable evidence, that there has ever been a major change in body form, body shape. There is no transitional record of that taking place. 150 years ago when Darwin wrote his book, they had some examples they thought were true that said, oh yeah, well these are examples of macro or Darwin theory of evolution. Turns out almost every one of those have been refuted at this time. And maybe even more damning than the fact that we don't have records of Darwinian evolution is the fact that when you figure that only one in 100,000 mutations are good for you, the rest of them are either neutral or they're detrimental, most of them being detrimental, we don't find any of the failures that Darwin's theory of evolution would predict. There's no record of the billions of unfit, such as, let's say, dinosaurs with an eye in the back of its head or dogs with webbed feet. They're just not in the record. They should be. Another example of why is the Cambrian explosion. We talk about the Big Bang after the beginning of the creation of the universe. Cambrian explosion was an event that took place about 543 million years ago, in which over 70 different body shapes or phyla were found. They appeared suddenly in the fossil record. Now, when I say suddenly, they appeared within, first they were saying 5 years, they were saying 2 years. The truth is that we can't date things that far back that accurately. And for all we know, they all occurred at one time. I'm not saying that's true, but it could have been.
Cambrian explosion in Darwin's time?
Yes.
Well,
he did know about it. And that was a problem for him. But they didn't know the exact dates. And that's now with radioactive dating that we've been able to do that. It's under 5 million years. So it's less than, say, 1% of the total time since the Cambrian explosion took place. But in that time, if you follow what Darwin says, gradual changes, there's no way that you could have that many new body shapes in that period of time. Now, the one that I like, because I'm an engineer mathematician, is a book written by Sir Fred Hall called The Mathematics of Evolution. Sir Fred Hall, he's an astronomer, mathematician, he's director of the Institute of Astronomy at Cambridge in England. A copy that I've got here, which was revised and published in 1999, he showed mathematically that it was impossible for the full macroevolution, what he calls evolution in the large, to occur mathematically. Now, earlier, he and a student of his by the name of Wick Ramashingi had gone through and showed that origin of life by the Oprim-Halprin method, the chances of it, they figured, was like 1 in 10 to the 40,000. Now, that's 1 in 1 with 40,000 zeros. That's zero. He is an atheist. He's an anti-Christian. In his writings, he says that Darwinian evolution is just not possible. In fact, he remarked that scientific challenges to evolution have never had a fair hearing because the developed system of popular education provides an ideal opportunity for awkward arguments not to be discussed and for discrepant facts to be suppressed. In other words, the Darwinists, naturalists, don't want you to discuss it. And this is from an anti-Christian atheist. I might point out that the Chinese communist scientists who have discovered a new group of Precambrian fossils, when they look at it, they said, this is just the opposite of DTA, or the tree of life, because your diversity is wide at the base and then it narrows. That's the opposite of what the tree of life is supposed to be. It's supposed to be all one common ancestor at the base and then spread out. That's not the way that the fossil record shows. It's very interesting that this high school teacher by the name of Roger Dehart of Washington State, he was banned from teaching biology because he taught about these fossil results in his class. And the reason he was banned was because the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, threatened to sue his school if he wasn't stopped. That sort of bears out just exactly what Sir Fred Hall said about the scientists that support Darwinism. There's several proofs of Darwin. These proofs are almost always hoaxes. I've listed four there. I'll run through them real quick. The Piltdown Man, in 1812, they found a jaw, looked kind of like a jaw that looked like part man, part ape. It was peer-reviewed in 1953. It was proven to be a fraud. It was put together from an ape and from a man. It was nowhere near as old as 1,000 years old they thought he was. There's a bird called the Arpiaca raptor. Now, this is different than the normal one you see, that was displayed prominently on the cover of the November 1999 National Geographic, which is total naturalistic kind of a magazine, and support that view. That was also later discovered to be a hoax. Most of you know about the peppered moth. That's the one that's in most biological textbooks. It turns out that is not an example of DT. In fact, the whole thing, it was fabricated. It is not true. It was tested in 1950, but somehow or another, that hoax still stays in biology textbooks. And then finally, there was a supporter of Darwin back in the 1880s who came up and showed drawings of embryos and how they changed. And they went through this process, and what he said is that the embryos show that we all start out, we go through this stage, we go through this evolution or Darwinian evolution stage. The embryos do. Turned out that his drawings were faked. They were false. That has been known since the 1890s, and yet those drawings continue to be in our biology book. Even though we know. And that word I hear people say, ontology recapitulates phylogeny. Well, that is not true. But it's still a well-used in the naturalistic community. There's another thing I put down there, because Richard Dawkins, who is a lecturer, professor at Oxford, also the University of California, I think he's the high priest of Darwinism. He's written the book River Out of Eden, which is supposed to show that even computers can reproduce this evolution of the eye. David Berlinski, check that out. It turns out it's a total fake. That the guy that he said did it says, we never did anything like that. We have nothing like that. We cannot show the evolution of the eye. What I'm saying here is this is not a science. This is their worldview. It's their faith. And if you tell them things like this, they get very upset at you. And almost always what they're going to do is they're going to throw back examples of evolution that are strictly microevolution. You have to sit there and say, well, sure, that's right, but that's not the Darwin theory, which is one common ancestor from which is grown. All the diversity of life, plant and animal, that we see. That's their faith, though. A lot of them are just ignorant of these facts. But a lot, especially those like Dawkins, they have to know the facts and they're just refusing to respond to. Any questions?
Did Darwin ever claim that the original life came about by natural processes?
Yes. In his book in 59, he gave the Creator, capital C, that said that he brought about the original life, maybe one, maybe a few. One of the Huxleys, H-U-X-L-E-Y, said, now if you do that, then you've lost it. Once you've got the Creator, then the Creator can create and would create. And so he then said, no, I was wrong, that there was some kind of evolution. The possibility of chemical evolution is essentially is zero. That's what Hall and his student came up with, was 10 to the minus 40,000 or 1 in 1 with 40,000 zeros behind it. And even though he doesn't believe in Christianity, at least he's honest enough scientist that he would say that. But later, yeah, he did change and say, no, that it came about by natural means. Well, thank you.